All right, and welcome back to the Mobility Podcast. We are recording still on day three here, live from the Automated Vehicle Symposium 2019 in Orlando, Florida. I'm joined by my co-host.
Greg Rogers from Securing America's Future Energy, or Safe Greg.
And we are excited to hear, this episode is going to be very focused on getting more of an international perspective of what's going on in the autonomous vehicle space. We have two great guests for us. Today we have Chris Leck, who is the Deputy Group Director for Technology and Industry Development at the Land Transport Authority in Singapore. And we're also joined by Marcus Burke, the Director of Automated Vehicles for the National Transport Commission out of Australia. Thank you guys for joining us.
Great to be
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, excited to have a Pacific episode.
Yes. Yes, we'll be releasing this one at 2 a.m. just to get the afternoon drive time. So welcome. Chris, we'll start with you. Can you tell us about your background and LTA and what you're working on?
Okay, sure. So the LTA is the Land Transport Authority in Singapore. We do everything from things like transport planning, to the building construction of roads and railway lines. We're also the regulator when it comes to public transport, when it comes to things like active mobility, your e-scooter sharing, that kind of stuff, but also vehicle homologation, so on and so forth. We're also the owner of public transport assets, your public buses as well as trains. So we are in a sense an all-encompassing kind of agency to do with anything to do with land transport in Singapore. So my background, I'm actually a defense guy. I'm on secondment from the defense ministry over to the transport family. So I've just been working in transport for about 2.5 years now. But it's a fascinating journey. I spent about 1.5 years at the ministry level where I dealt with futures and transformation issues, looking at all areas, air, land and sea. And I recently moved to the Land Transport Authority where I'm focused primarily on autonomous vehicle deployment in Singapore.
That's great. And Marcus, tell us about you.
So Marcus Burke, the Director of Automated Vehicles at the National Transport Commission. So the National Transport Commission, we're a government agency, we're a policy reform body working across all areas of land transport, so road, rail and intermodal transport. And our role is to examine areas of regulation in particular to look at how we can improve safety, environmental and productivity outcomes. I've been with the National Transport Commission for about 7 years now, working originally on a lot of heavy vehicle reform, so commercial, what do you call commercial vehicles here. But over the last 3 years also focused on regulation for automated vehicles, initially looking at how we manage testing, but now really focused on how we develop the full regulatory framework to allow commercial deployments of automated vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, I'd be interested to hear about how you're thinking about approaching sort of regulating AVs. What's happening in Australia?
Sure. So we report through to our transport ministers, which is equivalent to your transport secretaries here, both at the state and federal level. And they have given us a goal of developing end-to-end regulation for the commercial deployment of automated vehicles at all levels of automation. So we're working very heavily.
Simple task.
Simple task.
Are you done yet?
not quite, but we're working very hard to achieve that goal. So we've got five key areas that we're looking at. The first is looking at who is in control of an automated vehicle. Second, looking at how you assess safety when vehicles first enter the market, so safety at first supply. Third, looking then at how you ensure safety throughout a vehicle's life, so that it's not just safe on day one, but 5 years, 10 years down the track. Mm-hmm. The fourth area is insurance, and the fifth area is data and how you manage access to data. So in terms of how we're approaching it, I guess our approach is to try and develop a framework that's general, that we're not picking winners amongst applications or technologies or levels of automation, that we're developing a framework that's focused on safety, but is really putting it back onto industry to determine, you know, how they want to deploy and how they want to address those safety risks.
And so this include just sort of mandatory for the manufacturers, AV developers, to talk to the federal government, I assume?
That's correct. So we have had agreed the end of last year the policy for first supply, first market entry, and it's a similar approach to the AV policy here in the US, with the key difference that it's mandatory rather than voluntary. So ministers have agreed a set of safety criteria. The companies will need to demonstrate that they can manage the risks of cybersecurity and interaction with other road users and the operational design domain, as well as things like education and training that they need to provide to users. In addition, we have obligations for companies coming in that they will need to have some minimum financial requirements and to share certain data. And we're really keen to ensure that companies coming in are able to maintain their automated driving systems over time. It's not really just a product that you provide and then forget about. It's really moving to more of a service that companies are providing.
Absolutely. And so Chris, the Singapore had the first sort of AV deployments, right, with the I believe it was the Newtonomy shuttles, right, back then.
So I think this was 3 years ago, back in 2016, mm-hmm. They did a trial with
Feels like it, that was, you're like, in the dark ages.
It was 3 years ago.
I mean, in like AV sector dog years. I mean, it was,
So I mean, we're quite excited by what Newtonomy, and now, of course, Aptiv, because Aptiv bought over Newtonomy, what they're doing in Singapore. They have, I think they first started trials a couple of years back. But now I think they're really doing quite a bit more in terms of growing the scale of their trials. But we're also very happy actually to see many more players now doing trials in Singapore. So we have our own local players like ST Engineering, some of our universities as well, helping us in terms of developing the kind of platforms that actually we are quite interested in. Because for us as LTA, the focus is really on, I think, trying to use AVs to improve public and shared transport, as well as for, you know, things like freight and logistics. So we have some of these players that are working on some of the technologies for larger capacity vehicles, and we're very happy with that. But I think there are also other players, you know, Continental, Easy Mile, Bosch, some of the Chinese players are also now coming to Singapore to do R&D and to do trials in Singapore as well. So we're very encouraged by that.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, how did Singapore sort of get the first real deployment? I mean, how did you beat us? tell us your secret.
It was just something that we saw quite a number of years ago at the Ministry of Transport level. So I mentioned earlier, I used to do futures and transformation at the ministry. Mm-hmm. And back, this was 7, 8, 9 years ago. The futures division was set up then, and I think we saw the potential benefits that AVs could bring to Singapore. So we decided to, in a sense, make an investment and say, hang on, this is something that we ought to look at. What do we need to do to enable this to take off in Singapore? Because bearing in mind, I think, the mobility challenges and constraints we face in Singapore, we really wanted to get plugged in to look at technologies and solutions that can help us with these challenges that we face. So AVs came across as something that, you know, had a lot of potential benefit. So back in 2014, we set up a committee. It's a private public sector committee comprising companies, local and international, as well as all the relevant government agencies in Singapore. So that committee was set up in 2014. We started work, we charted like a vision and a roadmap, and, you know, things took off from there.
And I'm curious for both of you, you know, you're working on how do we regulate these? How were, you know, when these first came up, the first exercise that a lot of folks in the industry have to play is what is this and what is our rules that were in no way drafted with this in mind? Where does it fit into that? You know, there's always the one example that they point to is in the state of New York, that there was just a rule that a driver had to keep a hand on the wheel at all times. What was the kind of accidental lay of the land regulatory for in both your countries?
So we did a review of our existing laws at both the state and federal level in Australia to look at what the barriers were to the deployment of automated vehicles. And we actually found over 700 provisions in different state, territory and federal laws due to the fact that they assume a driver. So that's everything from requirements for mirrors and steering wheels in vehicle standards, but also throughout the road rules that require actions that really need a human. So
that were clearly written because people drive a car, and therefore, right. Yeah.
So, you know, and I think the really challenging ones for us that we're still working through is not just the obligations related to the dynamic driving task, but all the other obligations that we put on drivers today to stop and provide assistance at a crash, to ensure kids in the back seat have their seatbelt on or that the load on the trailer is tied down correctly. When you take the driver out of the equation, how do you maintain the intent of those laws whilst allowing them to be achieved in a different way?
That's so meaning, like, if I'm driving by and someone and there's a wreck, I'm obligated to pull in and provide assistance.
That's right. You can't, you know, drive off from a crash. You've got to stop and help.
Okay, even if you're not involved.
It's if you're involved.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah.
And Chris, what are you?
Actually, I suspect our legal regime in Singapore is quite similar to Australia's. Although I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not. Very
neither
sure,
are we.
we our Road Traffic Act is actually, in a sense, based off the UK Road Traffic Act.
Yeah.
So, you know, we when we looked at it a couple of years ago, again, I think that there was a little bit of untidiness, because what we could do with the Road Traffic Act was to give exemptions to, you know, certain vehicle construction rules, things that had the need to have a steering wheel and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the powers that we had. Which wasn't very neat. So what we did was that two and a half years ago, in early 2017, we revised our Road Traffic Act to put in place what we call regulatory sandbox. I think it's a concept that's, again, quite similar to in Australia and the UK and so on, where, you know, this regulatory sandbox really allows us to more nimbly create regulations as and when the need arises. So with amendments to legislation, you know, typically you have to go to Parliament, and that takes a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
But with this regulatory sandbox that we created through that amendment to the Road Traffic Act, we could, at the subsidiary legislation level, more easily create rules and also to amend them. So then that enables us really to, I suppose, respond very nimbly when the technology develops, or as and when we find out that there are new challenges that we need to work on. So we try to take, in a sense, a balanced approach that focuses both on ensuring public safety, but yet at the same time facilitating innovation. And this regulatory sandbox approach, I think, has helped us do that.
And now, does that provide company-specific, you know, exemptions or sandbox? Or is it, okay, now there's shared scooters, we can quickly do that? You know, is it more focused on, if I come to you as a provider, here's the thing I'm trying to do, here's why, you know, here's the exemptions we need, and then providing that specific to that company? Or is it, okay, here's a new bucket of technology, you know, we're going from a Waymo is doing these things to now, say, Nuro says, I want to do smaller, you know, delivery only. Is it for buckets or for companies?
I think more for buckets, if I understand you correctly. It's really about, you know, them coming to us, and now us being able to give them authorizations with certain conditions stipulated, and they will be held by law to meet those requirements that we stipulate in the authorization. So some of the things include, you know, the need to have a black box recorder in the vehicle, the need to connect to our Olive autonomous vehicle monitoring system when the AVs are running around in Singapore roads. You know, certain minimum requirements that the safety operators have to meet, but of course also to go through our milestone testing regime before we actually give authorization for vehicles to run on our roads. I think we're one of the few jurisdictions, maybe the only one, that tests autonomous vehicles before the authority allows them to trial on our roads or to do certain deployments.
So, like, you have a course set up, and or is it done through simulation?
So yeah, it's a three-level milestone testing regime. The first level is where we test the vehicles through a very simple means, things like just making sure that the autonomous vehicle can navigate safely around roads, that it can detect and stop for dynamic and static obstacles, the ability of the safety operator to take over the vehicle when necessary. That's just milestone one.
So you make the CEO walk out in front of it?
No. We have more sophisticated means. But this milestone one really just allows for, I think, vehicles to test in small-scale test bits, less complex traffic. Still public roads, still mixed traffic, but less complex. We have what we call milestone two, where then that's a far more complex test where It involves a mix of documentary reviews, things like simulation, closed course test, as well as on-road test. So it's a four-stage test for Milestone 2. And with Milestone 2, if you pass it, you can then go into more complex roads and traffic environments, you know, into densely populated towns, that kind of stuff.
This is interesting because Boston sort of had a similar approach. And I'm wondering if it was modeled off you guys, given sort of the background there. But when they're doing the sort of real world testing, do you have sort of these check boxes as in like making a left turn if you're waiting to yield to someone, or making a right turn waiting for pedestrians? How do you decide sort of what scenarios they have to go through?
So I think we ask companies for the environments that they want to trial their vehicles in. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, we tailor the tests specifically to where they want to go based on their ODD. There's a certain minimum set of testing requirements, of course, but then based on the ODD, we then add on, I think, specific elements. So, for instance, if they're going to areas where, I mean, maybe a very simple example, where there are roundabouts, it may not be in the initial list of testing requirements, but because they're going to areas with, say, roundabouts, we will then make sure that the vehicles can handle roundabouts. And this, like I mentioned, it could be done whether through simulation, through the test circuit, or on-road tests.
And have they been able to handle roundabouts so far? Have you had anyone do that?
Actually, I'm not sure whether any of the companies have. I believe so. We have quite a few roundabouts in Singapore, but in the areas where they are testing, I don't know, actually.
we have had at least one of our shuttles in Australia able to navigate a course with a roundabout. So, yes, it is possible. Yeah,
yeah. Excellent. I'd be interested in hearing sort of what companies you guys are working with and how you hope to approach or attract new AV companies. Is it sort of an active sort of thing that you're focused on, and how do you do that?
So from an Australian perspective, we've got a number of different trials taking place around the country, and we've got some of the same companies, Navya, EasyMile, Bosch, who are running different types of trials in different parts of Australia. In terms of the approach that we've taken, I guess our focus is on ensuring that we have a friendly regulatory environment that provides a lot of flexibility to industry whilst also prioritising safety. So we have guidelines for trials, which aren't prescriptive in terms of requirements. The main thing that it requires from companies is that they have a safety management plan in place and identify the risks that are relevant to the operational design domain of the trial that's going to take place, and they've got a very clear plan as to how they will manage those risks. So really trying to provide flexibility, but putting it back onto companies looking to bring technology in to manage those safety risks appropriately.
Great.
That's great. And talk to us a little bit on the data side. What data are you looking for from providers?
I mean, so for the what do you mean by data? Actually, could you be a bit more?
That's a good. To be honest, we hear a lot of we need the data from them,
yep.
And so I'm actually curious what that means from the regulator side.
Right.
I mean, I think it depends who you talk to in different parts of government. So in road agencies, there's traffic engineers who really want location data so that they can optimise their signal phase and timing systems. There's people in other parts of road agencies who want data so that they can make better decisions around investments in roads and know where to build new roads. And then, of course, there's safety information, both in terms of crashes, but potentially things like near misses as well, so that we can learn more rather than just relying on a crash to take place before we actually understand the safety issues. So I think one of the challenges here is there's a range of different interests in government in particular, and I think we need to be very clear about what the case for acquiring data is from industry, recognising that it has value to industry, that there are privacy considerations, commercial confidentiality considerations. So it's quite a challenging one to get the balance right. But our main focus is on data for safety, to ensure that where there is a crash, that appropriate information is provided to understand the causes of that crash.
Mm, yeah. I think for us in Singapore, it's quite similar. You know, I mentioned the Olive autonomous vehicle monitoring system.
Yeah, I was going
to. So as part of that, we do require certain data to be provided in real time by AV companies that are trialing their vehicles in Singapore. Things like, you know, where the vehicle is at any point in time, their speed, you know, the what status the vehicle is in traveling autonomous mode or manual mode, things like that. So that's one layer of data that we require. But of course, as part of our testing requirements, we do also require them to submit some data to us in terms of, you know, especially for the Milestone 2 test, what kind of processes, SOPs do they have in place? So we want to make sure that within these companies, they do have robust processes. And that's part of the things that we look at for our Milestone tests. But I think beyond that, you know, as the regulator, again, I think we are quite mindful that there are certain things that we can ask for, but certain things that are, in a sense, commercially sensitive or proprietary information. So, and I think especially at this stage where the technology is still quite nascent and, you know, the competition actually between companies is actually quite fierce, right? So there are areas where I think companies are also a bit sensitive too, and I think we try to respect that as well. So in certain cases where, you know, we feel that us as LTA, not just as the regulator, but as a potential asset owner, as someone who's, you know, planning future road infrastructure and building those future road infrastructure, we need to know a little bit more. And here then we partner specifically with different companies. So we have a few projects that we partner with some of the local companies, where, or even with Aptiv actually, where I think we try and get a better idea of where the technology is heading. And because we are seen as a close partner, we get a little bit more information, but we are quite careful in a sense to make sure that it's ring-fenced appropriately. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's that regulator's hat and then there's the one-way partner, right? So we have to make sure it's all firewalled properly. But that, I think, approach really allows us then to learn and see how we can, you know, better plan for the future.
And how do you guys handle kind of public, oh, you know, open information records type law? How is that handled? You know, is every data that I hand to you guys or to a state, can somebody file a form and that's now public information, or how does that handle?
Yeah, we don't have the same approaches here in the US where there are those quite strong requirements for agencies to publish, it seems, virtually any data that they receive. So I think we're able to probably manage that a little bit better than agencies here, so that we can set up arrangements where companies can provide data on a confidential basis so that we are protecting their IP.
So you can have a legitimate oversight and insight into the safety without it being something that gets broadcasted out that they have to explain from a, you know, why are disengagements going up? Well, because we're trying harder things, and it, you know, the horse race and VC angle of all of that. That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's the same for us in Singapore. I mean, as the regulator, I think we hold ourselves to certain levels of responsibility, and we I think assure companies that data that they share with us as the regulator is protected, the same way we would protect our own government sensitive kinds of data. Of course, I think there are provisions in the laws for when there may be a need to disclose certain information in the public interest, but I think the bar for meeting that is extremely high.
Okay.
So you need probably like a court order or something like that to be able to release that kind of information. But otherwise, we don't have a situation like in the US where I think you have Freedom of Information
Basically,
Act.
Yeah, whatever like you want. Yeah. So, but the flip side of that is how does... You know, that requires basically then the public to trust you guys.
Yeah.
And so how do you manage that, you know, because it is important to be able to show, A, we are on top of it, but also B, growing public acceptance of this is an improving technology kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to add, actually, I think there is that balancing part of it that we need to provide some assurance to the public that these... We're being responsible as
just because you don't have to doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. So I mean, I think part of that is, and at the moment it's been reasonably small scale trials, so there's not huge amounts of data to pass on. But it's about passing on enough information to give public some assurance about that safety is being managed appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think a key part of trials is making sure we're giving the public the opportunity to experience the technology and see it in action, so that you're building some of that understanding and confidence.
Yeah. I mean, so we've been doing the same stuff. I mean, we've been trying to do more in terms of engaging our public. So when you know, when we reviewed and revised our road traffic a couple of years ago, you know, the process through which we went through Parliament, you know, that allowed us to also put out some information to the public that follows whatever happens in Parliament. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I think whether it's online or through our own LTA gallery, things like that, we have tried to put out a bit more information. And increasingly, we are targeting more of the grassroots, where we go to the local constituencies and we try and engage the leaders there. For those that are, you know, impacted potentially by AV trials in their constituency. Mm-hmm. So we go, we brief them, and we, for some of them, we give them rides as well on the AV. So it gives them a very good handle, I think, on how the technology works. I think that real life touch and feel has been quite important, actually. Yeah.
That's fascinating. All right, and so what do you guys see in the next year? What's your big focus, and what can we anticipate coming from the West? Yeah.
Okay, so I think for Singapore, we released a technical reference 68 earlier this year in January. So this is really the first step in our move to create a standard for AVs in Singapore. So eventually, I think the idea is to elevate TR68 into a set of Singapore standards. And what TR68 currently does is that it provides a set of guidelines covering four areas. Things like vehicle behavior, what we expect of AVs when they run on roads in Singapore, certain hierarchy of rules, that kind of stuff. It also covers safety, you know, what are some of the guidelines when it comes to safety, especially functional safety, the traditional ISO 26262 kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It also looks at cybersecurity, how I think folks need to think about and deal with cybersecurity threats. And finally, it covers vehicular data types and formats, you know, what data ought to be exchanged between vehicles and infrastructure and other vehicles, so on. So it's something that we released in January. It was an industry-led effort with the participation of, I think, many companies internationally as well as in Singapore. But what we hope to do is to, you know, in the next year or two, continue to take in feedback from industry and then refine the TR68, perhaps, you know, either a next iteration or potentially sometime in the future, then a set of Singapore standards. So we did some consultations in Singapore. We were in Stuttgart, Germany in May, and we may do further consultations as well, likely over the course of the next year.
Great.
And for Australia, I talked about the work that we've done on safety at first supply. The next stage that we're looking at is in-service safety. So we're actually out for consultation at the moment on that, really looking at how do you assure the safety of these vehicles throughout their lifetime on the road, and looking at not just the manufacturer and what we call the automated driving system entity, so the company that's actually developing the automated driving system, but other parties such as owners of vehicles, repairers, road managers. Mm-hmm. And what their role is in terms of safety of the vehicles, how they're covered by regulation today, and whether there's any gaps.
So the fleet maintenance element of it, because it's...
I really love that, because that hasn't really been a conversation yet.
We haven't really gotten there yet, but, you know, yeah, that's great. You have a LiDAR. If it's covered in mud, is exactly that LiDAR actually safer? And how do you maintain it?
Yeah, is it going to, you know, gradually degrade over time? Yeah. How do you monitor for that?
And then the software, the over-the-air software update aspect of it, you know, is part of the you know, group, the fleet, you know, group learning, which is a positive, but also each update is more or less a entirely new system.
Yeah, how do you manage changes to the operational design domain? Yeah. How do you ensure that the companies producing the systems are keeping them up to date with changes to infrastructure, changes to laws, changes to the kinds of vehicles they're finding on the road, if they're suddenly finding, you know, more electric scooters or, you know, new types of vehicles? So looking at those in-service safety risks and what's the best way to manage that. One of the elements that we're looking at is whether there should be an overarching safety duty, again on what we call the automated driving system entity, to ensure the safety of the automated driving system. So that's a key part of our work. There's work going on by other agencies looking at things like infrastructure requirements for automated vehicles and trying to get some greater clarity around that. That's quite a challenging one because
it's hard to get.
Yeah, that's right. There doesn't seem to be a common specification from industry, even if you had the money to build to that specification. So I think that's one that we'll need to keep iterating on over time.
It's not a unique problem that Australia. No, that's kind of what everyone's the chicken or the egg, and or do we design the vehicle to the infrastructure or that's great.
And sorry, I was just going to add I guess we'd be hoping to see more and larger trials over the next 12 months as well that can help us learn more.
I mean, the other thing that we are also, I think, putting a lot of resource and attention into is preparing for a pilot deployment of AVs as public and shared transport in 3 of our towns. So just 2 years ago, I think we announced that in the early 2020s, where we have some new towns being built up, we are planning to deploy autonomous buses, your larger capacity buses that run fixed route scheduled services, as well as smaller capacity shuttles that provide on-demand dynamically routed type of services. So we hope to deploy these in the 3 towns that we are looking at by the early 2020s, and
Are you guys digging in on accessibility there? Where having a bus that drives itself is great, but if I can't request board and be secured in a wheelchair, there's still going to have to be a driver there, at which point it's just a really expensive bus. A safer but really expensive bus. So have you guys dug in on the there is a tech angle to that too? How do we automate
So I think we are talking to companies about how potentially this problem can be solved. But I mean, there are even more basic challenges. So for instance, if you're talking about the traditional public bus, I don't know how it's done here in the US, but certainly in Singapore, it's still, some guy waving his arm when he's at the bus stop or she's at the bus stop, and the bus driver seeing the guy and say, okay, he wants to board the bus. So, if you have an autonomous vehicle, how would the bus recognize that there's a commuter that wants to board?
Right.
So there are certain basic things like that. And so one of the trials that we have, we are working with an institution to look at, how your video analytics kind of software can pick up whether people are hailing the bus. So far, I think it's not 100%. We're talking about maybe 80%+, that kind of stuff. So there's still quite a bit that needs to be done, even for basic stuff like that. But then, of course, if you're talking about accessibility, or even others who may be in need of help within the vehicle itself, how do you detect if someone has fainted, someone is in need of help, or there's a fight, that kind of stuff. And I think today, if because we are also, we work very closely with our public transport operators. There are lots of these issues that happen on buses every day, right?
Yeah, it's the kind of stuff where we should be interviewing just a bus driver. Yeah. Just tell me about the stuff that these guys on the panels have never had to actually deal with, that they will, and they'll learn quickly that this is, maybe it's not just about it driving within the lane.
Yeah, I think even for the public, the kind of stuff that they are concerned about may be quite different from what we think. There was a survey done a couple of years ago in Singapore, and one of the things that came up was that commuters were very concerned about what happens if they bought an AV and they find that the AV is dirty or someone left something behind. How do they handle things like that? So very basic hygiene type of issues, rather than some of these more larger safety issues. So it was quite insightful.
Yeah, you ask any Uber driver what their worst part of the job is, the drunk passenger who got sick in my back of my car, which... that's great. So, guys, this has been amazing, and we hope to have more conversations and continue following and kind of exchanging notes and learning. So, where can our listeners find you guys online and find the work of your organizations?
So for Australia, the National Transport Commission, our website is www.ntc.nationaltransportcommission.gov.au. That you can find all the information about our work and also links to other Australian agencies such as Austroads, who are doing some of the infrastructure work that I talked about, and some of the state and territory departments who are also working in this area.
Great. Yeah. So for LTA, our website is literally lta.gov.sg, so I encourage your listeners to check it out. But actually, if you know, we're actually holding the ITS World Congress in Singapore in October this year. So again, if any of your listeners are interested in finding out more about what we do in Singapore, the ITS World Congress is a fantastic opportunity to come. It's the premier ITS event globally.
Yeah.
But there'll be lots of demos, technical tours, at the Congress venue itself, but also in other parts of Singapore. So you can visit, say, our Citroen Autonomous Vehicle Test Centre and see what's going on there, or even go to one of our test bits and I think hop on an AV and experience it for yourself.
That's fascinating. Well, and is there a website yet for the World Congress?
Yeah, it's itsworldcongress2019.com.
Perfect. And Greg, where can we find you?
At AV Gregor.
And this is Pete. You can find me at Shared Mobility S on Twitter.
And find the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast and at mobilitypodcast.com.
Perfect. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks,
thank you, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.